Welcome to this episode of Surf Sessions, the series where we go behind the scenes with top founders, CEOs, board members, and investors to figure out how they leverage their boards to drive success. We're really excited to have as our guest today Phil Libin, co-founder and CEO of and All Turtles. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, and I'm curious to see these top co-founders and CEOs.
I know. I mean, we are too. This series is still new, but we've had some really insightful and interesting conversations already. And there's been a lot of great knowledge sharing that's already been done. So, yeah, we're excited to see this series develop. All right. Part of the reason we're really excited to talk with you specifically, as I mentioned, throughout this series, we're interviewing people who have different roles and different perspectives. So some are first-time founders, some have been really experienced founders, investors, board members. You sort of hit all of our categories. You have experience as a founder and CEO. You also have experience as a board member and investor. And I'm sure that those experiences have to inform one another.
Yeah, I'm primarily a founder. I'm an investor and a board member, but that's almost incidental. I'm on my, I don't know, fifth or sixth startup that I'm building, and I think that's what takes up the majority of my time and attention. But yeah, I was a full-time VC for a few years with General Catalyst. I've been an angel investor and seed investor for a while. I'm on a few boards, so I've seen the industry over the past couple of decades and from lots of different directions. But for whatever reason, keep coming back to it.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting. A lot of the challenges that we address as we're talking to founders is this sort of idea that they're not always certain what their board members or investors are looking for. Like, I know I should send a company update, but I'm not really sure, what kind of information my investors are going to care about. You, however, really have that perspective. Like, you're able to say, like, as an investor, these are the things that are most interesting to me, and this is what I would want to hear as a founder. Has that helped you as a founder sort of repeat or apply those insights in a way that helps you just kind of cut through any of those unknowns?
Well, I think this is actually pretty straightforward. And again, speaking to founders, who cares what the investors and board members want to hear from you? To completely reverse the John Kennedy quote, ask not what you can do for your investors, ask what your investors could do for you. Same with board members. The interesting thing is, how do you make your board and your set of investors useful for you, for the company? Because that's what they want, right? They want the company to be successful. You want the company to be successful. In that sense, the interests are fully aligned. And I think a big mistake that I used to make as a much younger founder, and that I still see founders making all the time, is they think it's the other way around. They somehow think that they need to update boards and investors, that they work for their investors, and they don't. The board and the investors are here to help you. So ask what you want from them. How do you make them useful to you and to the company? Everything goes much smoothly at that point.
Yeah, and I love that you mentioned that. That's something that we talk about a lot. It's like there is this sort of misconception that a founder, board member, investor relationship is one way. It's your job as a founder to
It
report.
is one way. It's the board's job to help you.
Right, but that's the exact inverse, right, of
Not the
what.
it's the wrong way. It's not the way that a lot of people think it is.
Yeah, and I love that you just bring this up right off the bat because I think this is the biggest misconception that people need to overcome in order to be successful. Like, people are so focused on making a good impression and reporting and hitting these benchmarks, and there's almost no conversation happening around, like, what is your investor's role in your company's success? And how do you actually tap people in and activate those people, not just in a passive way? But, like, really, what are they doing to help you be successful?
Let me maybe kind of clarify and put some context around what I mean, because in some sense I want to correct a potential misunderstanding. What I'm talking about is for startups. For bigger companies, for more established companies, the board has a very different role. For real established businesses, the board has legal and moral and ethical governance issues, and their primary job is not necessarily to help the company. The primary job is to make sure the company fulfills its social contract to do right by all of its shareholders, and they have other responsibilities as well. So, of course, like that is the formal role and responsibility, and it's something that hopefully boards at big companies take very seriously. At a startup, those same formal responsibilities apply, of course, but since most startups aren't at a point yet where governance becomes the central issue, and where a lot of the board members are also investors. Again, in bigger companies, many of the board members aren't strictly shareholders or investors. In the startup, many of the board members are either founders or investors, so they're very financially motivated to do it. Everyone's aligned towards helping the company succeed. So if you're at a point, if you're at a startup, if you're a startup founder, and your board is dealing with things other than helping you succeed, something's gone horribly wrong. Like if the board is actually exercising its governance, preventing you from doing unethical things, like that kind of stuff, like that's already very seriously off the track. At the vast majority of startups that are still at a reasonable stage of their business, board just wants to help you, and investors just want to help you. And it's important to understand that. And I think like it's important to be clear. And again, it's easy for me to say, like speaking as an investor. Let's say I invest in a company. I'm an investor in Surfboard, for example. A very proud investor in Surfboard. Let's say I invest in a company. And strictly as an investor, what does the founder want from me? Just as an investor, put aside whether or not I give good advice or whatever, just as an investor. Really, all the founder and CEO cares about as an investor is that when the next round comes around, that I support the company, that I want to invest. That's basically it, right? Once you've taken someone's money as a founder, what you really care about is are they still there for the next time you need their support. And so as an investor, when the next round comes around, I'm going to want to invest if the company's doing well. And I'm not going to want to invest if the company's not doing well.
Yeah, I'm curious, I think you're exactly right. Like at the end of the day, there is that very cut and dry, like, yeah, we just need funding. And if our investors give us nothing but funding, that's still great for us as a startup.
That's your job.
Yeah, ideally that also comes with, that advice and that insight and those other benefits that, especially, I think for a lot of first-time founders, they don't have the experience and they're not able to index on those same points. So that is an advantage if you are lucky enough to have an investor who engages with you in that way. I'm curious kind of what you think. There is this sort of balance between, yes, like is the company doing well? Like that is sort of the fundamental metric of success. But I'm also curious to know from your perspective, what you think the role is and kind of the trust that exists or doesn't exist between founders and investors, and how important is that in determining, yeah, like do you get a future round of funding?
I think so. I think it's probably important to separate the role of an investor and the role of a board member. And often in startups, those overlap. It's the same human beings that are investors and board members. That is often the case. But they're still. But even when that's happened, they're still in two separate roles. And not every even at startups, hopefully, not every advisor or board member is an investor, and vice versa. Not everyone who's giving you money tells you, sits around the table and tells you what to do. So it's useful to have that distinction in your mind, like right away. And so for investors, the only thing you care about as a founder for investors is that they support you when you need more money. And that they don't like that. That's basically it. Like they can't do anything better than be there when you need another check. They can do things that are worse. They can do things that hurt you. They can waste your time. It's the primary way that they can hurt you. But they really can't do anything better than getting out of your way and being there to support you when you need money. Just strictly for investors. If those people are also board members, advisors, employees, then of course they have other things that you want from them. You actually want them to be useful. But almost every startup has investors who really all they need, you just need to think of them as investors. And for those people, don't overthink it. Just like do have your company succeed and they'll want to invest. For board members, for advisors, for things like that, for people that are more active in my life, I really have kind of three criteria that I sort of mentally score everyone on, regardless of whether I'm, you know, doing this as a founder or I'm a board member, an investor, and working with founders or whatever. It's kind of three criteria. I kind of think like, okay, how actually useful is this person? Like, how smart are they? How much do they know? Do they give good advice? Do they have the bandwidth, the horsepower to actually do useful things? Not everyone does. Second is how much do I trust them? Meaning, how much do I inherently understand that our interests are aligned, and I trust that we're always going to be acting for the same interest. They're not going to act against my interests. I'm not going to act against their interests. There's not going to be any deception. There's not going to be any subtext, trust. And the third, which I think a lot of people conflate with trust, but it's actually separate, is reliability. How much can I rely on them to actually do the stuff that they say they're going to do? Those are kind of the three attributes. And depending on my relationship with a person, the formal relationship, the weight that I place on those three attributes is different. The one that never changes is the second one, is the trust. Regardless of what the relationship is, if we don't have solid trust, I will not deal with this person. That's it. It's just like life's too short. Life's too short to deal with people you don't trust. If you've got investors that you don't trust, hopefully you figured out that you don't trust them before they've given you money. Just walk away. And if you've got investors or board members or whatever that you don't trust, like the only thing to do with people that you don't trust is figure out how to separate yourself from them. That's it. I have like basically like that the dial on trust is set. It's like it's binary. It's a switch. It's either on or off. And if it's off, the only thing I'm looking for is the exit. How useful someone is, that's going to be different, right? If I'm looking at board members, I really want them to be useful. I want them to like tell me important things. I want them to help me think through things. I want their experience. I don't particularly care about connections and contacts. I think a lot of first-time founders over-index on the importance of like introductions. Introductions, just I don't know, just in my experience, like you can get to talk to pretty much anyone you want. The introductions aren't super important, but you know, it's a nice thing to do. So if I'm a founder looking at board members, yeah, I want them to be useful. I want the knob on usefulness to be pretty high. Otherwise, like I'm wasting my time and they're wasting their time. And if they stop being useful because maybe the company's at a different stage or whatever, then okay, that's fine. Like no one owes me to be useful, but then we'll just ratchet down the amount of time that we spend together. And then the third is reliability. How reliable? Like how much can I count that people will do it? And that really varies based on what the relationship is. So for example, for my employees, they need to be very, very, very high reliability, right? I need to know that if somebody on my team, as a CEO, somebody on the team says that they can do something, they need to be very reliable. My board members, I understand if they're not as reliable because, you know, they're not doing this every day, they're not full time, they don't have the full context, you know, you talk to them every so often. So like, I'm willing to, as long as they're trustworthy, if they sometimes forget to do something or whatever, like that's okay. I don't mind as much on their reliability. But I think that like that framework has really been useful to me. So whenever I'm dealing with anyone, whatever capacity, I just think, okay, what is my expectation for usefulness? What is my expectation for trustworthiness? What is my expectation for reliability? I will never tolerate non-trustworthiness. I just can't. But the other two, well, yeah, I'll slide those up and down based on the relationship and based on what I expect.
Yeah, and you know, we have also given that advice. We've written content about this that, you know, the best way to avoid a negative board member relationship is to avoid getting into it in the first place. Really indexing on that due diligence process and doing that vetting really early on before you take money from somebody, before you give a board seat to somebody, making sure that that trust really is there. It's interesting. I think there is sort of that foundational level of trust that you go into any relationship with, right? Like you have to have kind of that, okay, we're going to agree to trust each other, but then really you continue to cultivate and like reinforce that trust over time. I'm wondering from your experience, are there certain things that really work toward accomplishing that and like bolstering that trust? And maybe the inverse, are there things that like are very quick to just completely erode any trust that might have existed?
My general approach is to trust people by default because I don't have time for people to earn my trust. So I trust everyone. But if they break the trust, then I just never deal with them again. So it's like, so I'd actually take a little bit of the opposite of your advice, which is like, I don't need that much due diligence ahead of time to figure out whether or not I'm going to trust someone. You know, I mean, sure, if they have a non-trustworthy reputation, that's an easy way out. But like me doing research for an hour versus me doing research for 6 years is unlikely to yield that much different results in terms of how much I'm going to trust them. So I'm just going to trust people by default. And if it turns out I can't trust them, I'm just not going to deal with them. I'm just going to move towards trying to sever that relationship, which is usually possible to do. Again, not in a bad way. Like, you don't have to be enemies about this. Just like, if there's no trust, then, you know, bye. And if they're already on my board, bye. I mean, it's okay. They don't want to be there either. So I don't think you should be afraid. I don't think founders should be afraid of learning that they don't trust someone. And then, you know, do you try to repair that? Yeah, maybe. But again, like, life's short. So I would say, you know, trust people in general. And once you can't, then they're done. Now, again, it's important to separate trust from reliability, right? Reliability, I'll put up with much more variability because sometimes, you know, like, people have lots of stuff going on. That's okay. In some roles, reliability is also super important. But in other roles, it's like, I'm much more forgiving. But on trust, almost never. There is something you said, though, which I think is like, which I think where the language is really important because it really affects psychology. And this is, I disagree strongly with the way that this is usually said, which is give a board seat. You said you give someone a board seat. I think this is the wrong approach. I don't give anyone any board seats. It's even worse to say give up a board seat. You hear people saying, like, when should you give up a board seat? Well, that is terrible. It's like, you can't think like that. That psychology is entirely wrong, and the word is entirely wrong. No. I don't give up board seats. I don't give board seats. I recruit board members. I ask people who I want to be on the board to be on the board. And if they accept, I'm super happy. And I would never put someone on the board or accept someone on the board that I felt like I was giving something up, that I felt like the board seat is not a thing that's like precious to me that I don't want to surrender. It's not an adversary relationship. I recruit people, even if they're investors. Like, that is an active thing. And I think, like, just that psychology is important. So I would say right off the bat for founders, change your psychology to, like, you're not giving up board seats. You are recruiting board members. If you don't think of it that way, then of course you're giving up board seats and you're going to have kind of crappy board members. But if you think about it as you are recruiting them, things feel very different.
Yeah, I love that perspective shift. And I think, as I touched on earlier, there's this common tendency for founders to feel like they're maybe not in the driver's seat in terms of their relationship with their board members or their investors, even though they are very much in the driver's seat with their company and what they're building. That impulse almost gets flipped once you're in a boardroom, in a, you know, pitching to an investor. I think psychologically something happens where you feel that the other person is in the driver's seat and it's your job to sort of defer to whatever you think they are looking for. And it's interesting to hear you sort of reinforce this idea of, like, no, you should be making these decisions proactively at every stage. And it's not about, yeah, what do you give up? What are you willing to compromise on? What are you willing to let somebody take? It's like, you should be bringing people into this and expecting that you're getting some sort of benefit from it too. And if you're not getting that benefit, don't do it.
Right. And again, sometimes it is just the perspective shift. And the perspective shift on the founder side and talking about it correctly will, you know, very often results in the same perspective shift on the board member side or on the investor side. Because look, I'm going to let you in on this. Like, as a board member's investor, it's not like I want board seats, right? Like, maybe the first time somebody asked me to be on their board, I don't know, 25 years ago, maybe I was like, oh, cool, I get to be on the board once. By the second time, I'm like, hey, this isn't actually like, no, I'm not in it for like some illusion of power or importance. It's not like you're not doing me a favor by asking me to be on a board. I want to be on boards like if it's something that I really believe I can help and it's work. And if anyone, like, if I was ever on a board and the founder didn't want me there, bye. All right, great, fantastic. I'm happy to, like, have that time back. And that's not just me. I think that's very common. I think it's quite rare to meet investors or board members who desire to be on boards and who see it as like, you know, yes, like there's people who will want, you know, a larger share of your company, you know, more stock, whatever. Sure, sure. Those are positive. But being in a board, that's not a positive thing. Now, you know, some investors will have their various bylaws that say, you know, okay, if you're leading an A round, we have to take a board seat because that's how they've represented it to their limited partners. Sure, okay, whatever. But even there, you're still recruiting the board member. And if you're talking to a VC firm and there's a board seat, it's still up to you. You should still say, I want you to be on the board. Or, hey, can I have that other person instead of you? That's fine too. It's actually totally fine at a VC firm to say, well, okay, like, yeah, you know, I want a VC on the firm, but I'd really want this person. Can you have this person on the board? That's okay. Like, you're not gonna hurt anyone's feelings. Or yeah. You might, but who cares?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's also something that I think a lot of, especially first-time founders, don't think they can do. It's like, yeah, maybe your, you know, your agreement entitles your investor, your VC, to X number of board seats, but you do still have some influence over what that looks like.
And well, you can also not take the money. So
also true. Yeah. I really want to get into this idea. You know, we've touched on trust. I want to get into this idea that you brought up of usefulness. And that really resonated with me because we spend a lot of time talking to our users in particular about the struggles they have engaging their board members. Like, even if they understand that, yes, I should be, you know, activating my board members, seeking input, seeking advice, there are still these gaps in that the literal engagement. I'm wondering if you have any advice for founders on how you encourage people to be more actively engaged in your day-to-day, not just, you know, on this very quarterly basis.
Yeah, I think a lot of this is about frequency of communication. And by frequency, most of the time it's just not frequent enough, but the point is not to make it necessarily more frequent. The point is to communicate when you want to have a discussion, when you want to have a conversation. Not as a formalized thing when you're updating. Also not only when there's, you know, good news and you're trying to do something self-serving. So the people that you want to have good conversations with, and hopefully most of your board members are people that you want to have good conversations with, not all of your investors necessarily, because like I said, like you don't necessarily need anything from them. They might be very useful. But the people who have the capacity to be very useful and who are on your board or who are on your advisors, you should be having conversations with them. And a conversation, by definition, is not you reading an update. It's not a status report. It is a conversation. It starts with some question. You're seeking advice. You've got actual well-formed questions. The questions are interesting. You're listening and responding to them. It's just surprising that doesn't happen more often in board meetings. That's what I try to do, right? So, have board members that you actually want to get their help, their opinion, that you want to run ideas by them, and then do that with like actual genuine questions, not updates. Because like, again, as a board member, it's boring to get updates. It's not like I want to see updates. I mean, like, yeah, sometimes I have to, but it's like, that's not interesting. I don't want to feel like someone is like doing a chore reporting to me. So I think like the main thing is many people have this emphasis on the board meeting. And that's the wrong emphasis. Like the emphasis shouldn't be on the board meeting. The emphasis should be on the board relationship. And that's what something like Surfboard is so exciting, is it kind of gets away from the meeting as the central focus, and it takes it back to the actual conversations and the relationships that should be ongoing with the board. And then that's kind of the main thing. And it feels, unfortunately, many entrepreneurs are kind of conditioned for a long time to see the board as something that's just a reporting structure. And that's boring and unhealthy, and no one likes it, and board members don't like it, and entrepreneurs don't like it. So I think you just like force yourself to treat these people as if they were actually useful, good human beings, and then they will be.
Yeah, it's like it's this funny reality that even though everybody across the board sort of hates the status quo of like what a board meeting looks like and what these relationships look like, you know, every person we talk to pretty much expresses like, yeah, it's frustrating. Board meetings are boring. They're not a good use of time.
Not all, but
No,
many.
right. Of course, there are people who are finding ways to make this valuable, but the sort of quintessential, like, textbook, if you're following what some article online tells you to do about, like, this is how a board meeting should be run, and you're spending 50% of it running through updates, and you've spent all your time putting together a slide deck, like, those are the moments that people almost across the board find pretty frustrating. But we've created this culture where that is the default. And people have a really hard time, I don't know, ex either acknowledging or maybe understanding in the first place that it's okay to just completely throw that expectation out the window and really be looking for, like, where do you need help? What are the things that will actually make an impact for you to spend this time on? And then just spend your time there. All of these other things, just because it's something that everybody does, doesn't mean it's worth doing.
I think that's right. You think about it like, well, how do you talk with co-founders? If you have a co-founder, are you like updating each other? Do you like send reports to your co-founder? Hopefully not very many, right? You're working together. You're having actual conversations. And it's not like you're not like delivering good news or bad news. You're having a conversation about your company and what's important. And that's what you're doing with your board, at least the useful portions of your board. That's what you're doing with them. Like the board is an ongoing conversation about your company that'll last for many years. And the conversation is a little bit slower than with your co-founders because you're not talking to them every few hours or every few minutes. But it's still a continuous conversation with high quality, useful people. And you should treat it the same way as you treat conversations with high quality, useful people who aren't on your board. And I think like a good, again, so much of this is really a perspective change, like you said. And a good way to do the perspective change is just to like set up some words that are like flags that you can just, as soon as you, once you see a word like this, you know that you've already opened the wrong track. And one of those words is board meeting. So if you're reading an article about like how to run a board meeting, wrong. Who cares? Think about how to run a board, not a meeting, a board. How do you run a board? How do you have a good board meeting? Wrong question. How do you have a good board? And in some ways, the bigger question is actually much easier to answer, right? Like by making it more ambitious, you're actually making it clearer. So forget about the board meeting. Like have a good board. And then the meetings are just a way that you talk. Like those are easy.
Yeah, I love the way you framed that. I think, again, this is something we hear over and over and over as we talk to people who are figuring out how to navigate this for themselves. And the starting point almost always is, well, I meet with my board 4 times a year and we talk at meetings and everything is about the board meeting. And yeah, whether you're researching, looking for information on best practices, like the thing that comes up to the surface every single time is board meetings. And we spend a lot of time trying to tell people, like, sure, your board meetings are important in that they happen, they're on the calendar, and you probably want to make good use of that time if you're going to spend it there. But it's really not the area where you're going to be able to get the most value out of this relationship. And
But they're not important.
yeah.
I wouldn't even say that sure they're important. I would say they're not important.
Yeah, I
I mean,
mean
they're important in
they're
some sense.
important in the sense, I mean it in the sense that to a founder, if they're going to have a board meeting, you want it to go well. It's something it maybe isn't important in terms of have to do, but it's something that you care about going well. And so I see why people tend to over-index on that because, they want it to go well. It feels high stakes. And so it's like, yeah, we're really going to invest in this. But actually, by over-indexing on that and under-indexing on all of the rest of the time between those meetings, you're really leaving the majority of the value on the table.
Yeah, it's like, let's say you like go to the doctor, you have a doctor's visit, once a year or whatever. And you ask yourself, like, you Google, like, how do I have a good doctor's visit? It's weird, right? You're not trying to optimize the quality of the doctor's visit, you're trying to optimize how healthy you are. And it turns out that like optimizing your health doesn't have that much to do with what you do during the doctor's visit. There's some things, you want to like, don't like keep anything secret, like talk about the rest of the stuff. But what you do in the doctor's office for an hour is not the main contributor to your health. There's like other stuff, right? No one like obsesses, or hopefully no one obsesses about how to do you conduct the doctor's visit. And it's the same thing. It's the same thing with your board. Like the board meeting, the thing that's going to happen in the meeting is not really that important. It could hurt you. There could be things that are bad. Just like if you really like screw up a doctor's visit, you know, you can probably damage yourself and get some bad advice or whatever. But it's very unlikely that anything's going to happen in a board meeting that's going to help you. Very unlikely. What's going to help you is working together with hopefully high quality, useful, trustworthy, and reliable people that you've got around you on the board, working with them in between all the meetings and actually doing useful stuff. And that's what the focus should be. It should be, how do you have a good board? Not how do you have a good board meeting. And so are board meetings important? I mean, I guess just like doctor's visits are important, but they're not actually the thing that's going to lead to a good outcome.
So I'm curious, you know, we are kind of circling around this idea of there's the way that people sort of think it has to be done. And then there's this whole potential universe of ways this could be done and ways these relationships could look that have nothing to do with how things are typically run. I'm curious from your perspective, what you think would be like the epitome of a board founder relationship, like given a complete blank slate.
Yeah. So I think like this is not, it's not actually uncommon to have like well-run, healthy board founder relationships. It actually happens all the time among the successful startups. It's just not very many of those. Right. And so like the vast majority of startups fail for all sorts of reasons. One of those reasons, probably not a major one, but one of the reasons is probably, you know, poor board, you know, management. But the ones that succeed, you know, they tend to have pretty good relationships with boards and they're pretty healthy. And good doesn't mean like necessarily pleasant. Like they can be quite strenuous sometimes, but they're very useful. They're very good. So like it's not that like this is like somehow ingrained in our culture and, you know, you're totally swimming against the stream by trying to change it. No, like almost every successful startup is having pretty decent board meetings. They just happen to like figure it out themselves going against the grain because like, yeah, most of the textbook stuff or the Wikipedia stuff or whatever that you read on it is bad advice. But if you're a startup founder, like what you're doing this because you think that large parts of the world are like inefficient and poorly made anyway. So you're already like changing things. So like why get stuck on this particular thing? Talk to founders that have been successful. And talk to board members about their most successful companies. Hey, how does this company do it? You know, hey, you're on the board of this startup and they're killing it. What are they doing? And just do that. And there's actually like, it's not a secret. It's just that like the vast majority do it poorly, but the vast majority do everything poorly.
Yeah, I think it's great that you make this correlation between, you know, as a founder of a startup, you probably already have that mindset that there, you don't have to accept the status quo. There are things you can do to just completely change the way something has been done forever. So there's no reason that you should prevent yourself from applying that mindset when it comes to board meetings. Like, rethink that too. Do that your own way. Experiment. Be prepared to fail. Do something else. See what works.
Yeah, or leave the board meeting alone as is, because again, it's not that important. Just change the way you deal. Change the way you run the board. Even if you don't change your meetings, and the meetings are just boring 4-hour status reports. Okay, whatever. Who cares? I mean, you will change them. Just because once you have a good relationship with the board, it'll turn out that you don't need that stuff. But, you know, you don't even have to start by thinking how you're going to reform your board meetings. Just forget the board meetings. Leave them as they are. Think about how are you going to communicate with the board members? What are you going to ask from them? How are you going to have a discussion? How are you going to build the muscle memory into doing this? What tools are you going to use to do this? It's just like having conversations with hopefully really good and experienced co-founders. It's just that they're not there for you every day because they're doing other things. So it's like you have to be a little bit more creative about some combination of, you know, synchronous and asynchronous communication. But like you're trying to have a good conversation with people who are very experienced, hopefully, pretty smart, hopefully, and want to help you because that's why they're doing it and do it that way. And then the meetings, I don't care. Meetings will fix themselves. Just like, you know, if you're healthy, the doctor's appointments are.
Yeah, you're right. No one, I think, has ever Googled in the history of doctor's appointments how to have a good doctor's appointment.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a thing in pediatrics. I think parents probably care a lot about that, but yes.
I'm interested, I think we've established pretty clearly that board meetings are not the area where people should be focusing all of their time, attention, and energy. We obviously have a platform that is encouraging people to leverage more asynchronous communication and really use that as a way to improve the way that you communicate with your board and investors, being able to keep people more in the loop day to day of what's going on, hopefully reduces that catch-up time that people will need to have in order to give you really useful advice. I'm wondering from your perspective, either as a founder or as a board member, what kinds of communications do you see as being particularly valuable and maybe compared to ones that are not really so valuable and people shouldn't waste their time on?
I think the valuable stuff are questions, and questions that are like good questions that are like obvious that the questions are like useful and interesting, and that's like it's non-trivial to ask good questions. You have to kind of think about it. First, you have to just start thinking of your board members as people who will actually give you useful answers to questions or really help or help you figure out. Questions. Updates are much less useful, right? Because, like, again, what's the point of an update? How does an update help you, the founder? You're expecting me as a board member to look at the update, then what? Like, maybe I'll look at the update and have questions and ask you questions, and maybe that conversation will lead to a better decision. But that's a pretty roundabout way of doing it, right? Like, you should do that, of course. You still need updates, but like, you're kind of relying on a whole bunch of things happening for that to be useful to you. Is an update useful to you? Sometimes, but not usually. Is a good question useful to you? Yeah, usually. So I think the best thing is questions. And again, that's how you talk with all sorts of people in your life, right? So do the same thing with board members.
Yeah, and I think thinking through, why a lot of founders maybe wouldn't be asking those questions, just sort of innately understanding, like, I actually do have a question and it would help me to get this answered. It feels, when we talk about this, it feels sort of obvious. And yet there's this tendency for people to avoid asking those questions, which I sort of assume is a fear of looking like you don't know something. And I think that's pretty common in our culture in general, particularly in, business culture, that people want to have all the answers and we don't admit when we don't know something. But I'm curious, if you have any advice for founders who are maybe feeling that pressure of like, it makes me look bad if I'm asking a question.
I'm not evaluating founders based on what they know. I'm evaluating founders based on what they want to know. Right, that's the interesting thing. Like, of course, you don't know most things. I don't know most things. No one knows most things. That's great. It's great. The question is, what do you want to know, and what are you doing to find out? So I think, like, I don't think I've ever. Trying to remember if I've ever like gotten a question from a founder where I was just like, "Whoa, really? You don't know that? That's it. I'm out." I don't think that's ever happened, right? I don't think I've ever asked a question for someone and had the response be like, "What?" Table flip. I walk out. Like, yeah, you don't know, so you ask because you didn't want to find out. You get credit for wanting to find out an important thing. I had this great interaction when I was, much earlier in my career, but I was already a CEO, and I had a chance to meet Steve Ballmer, who was the CEO of Microsoft at the time, and I was like super excited, to meet him. And I'm like, "Hey, can I just ask you some like CEO questions?" And he's like, "Sure. Like, what do you mind?" And so I was like, "What does a CFO do?" That was a really good question, it turns out. We had like a nice multi-hour discussion. He like invited me over. He's like, "Well, because I'm like, look, I'm like, I have an accountant, and I'm getting like, I'm getting people saying that like I need a CFO, but like, what does the CFO do?" And he had some really good answers to that. It was like, it turns out that Steve Ballmer was a great person to ask that question. You know, oh, there's like these different types and depending on the stage of the company and whatever. It's not like he's like, you don't know what a CFO does. How am I going to talk to you? So I would go about it with the learner's mindset. Like people, you're going to be more impressive to people because they see that you're trying to figure out interesting things, important things.
Yeah. And I'm hoping that it will help people to hear you say that as someone, you know, who is an investor, is a board member. I think we do have some work to do in terms of culture of breaking down that stigma or that pressure that people feel to have every answer. And actually, it's such a disservice to you, to your company, to everybody around you if you're not learning the things you need to be learning. And assuming that we all know everything, I mean, I can't imagine no one would ever get anything done. Everything would probably be a disaster.
Yeah, the questions are always the most important thing, and sometimes the best answers are questions, and then just make you think about something else.
Yeah, totally.
I would focus on who's on the board that you actually want to have interesting discussions with. The people who aren't, don't talk to them, or maybe only talk to them during board meetings. You know, once a quarter, it's fine. Don't worry about it. The people who you do want to have interesting discussions with, because those discussions you walk away from being, wow, that was really useful. Not, oh, okay, I updated that person. Like those people, yeah, ask questions.
This has been great. I want to be mindful of the time, but before I let you go, I'm just want to give you the opportunity if there's any other insight, advice, anything else you think either founders or board members would benefit from hearing.
I think the main thing for founders to keep in mind is that the board is there to help you. And sometimes we fall into these patterns that are different patterns. And sometimes if you fall into those patterns as a founder, the board members will reflect that back to you. Because, you know, people fall into roles. They fall into, oh, okay, you're acting this way. Okay, so I'm going to play my part. And I think for founders, the advice is, like, don't do that. Keep in mind, the board members are there to help you. They don't work for you, but they're there to help you, which is even better than if they work for you, because you'll actually get honest answers from them. So engage them with the right questions. Don't think of it as updating them. Think of it as having a discussion, because it is a discussion. And my advice for board members is, like, yeah, like don't fall into that pattern either. And if you see that a founder is falling into the pattern of giving you updates and, you know, saluting and treating you like someone that you need to update, and you don't want to do that. If you don't want to talk to this person, great, fine. Read the updates once a quarter and you're fine. But if you actually care, then you break that cycle to say, hey, like let's put the board stuff aside. Let's talk about this, you know, in a useful way. And that perspective shift can be initiated by either party. I think, you know, founders have more at stake to initiate it, so it may as well come from you.
This has been great. There's so much in here that I think, you know, founders are going to be able to apply to what they're doing to hopefully get a lot more value out of this relationship that they're building with their board members and their investors. And it's great to be able to hear from somebody who has the perspective of both. And, you know, the empathy and the insights that come from that, just knowing, like, yeah, these things that you feel are important maybe aren't so much. Being able to get all these insights from someone who has a foot in each camp has been great. So thank you again for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.